Well, it happened. This is not the day any of us wanted. Andy Dalton, who has been rumored to the Bears for like 3 years now, and now it's official. Dalton coming on a one-year, $10 million deal that can be worth up to $13 million to do something. Don't really know what, but he's doing something. And maybe he's starting, maybe he's backing up, maybe Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson are still coming here. But this is just a brutal, brutal moment for Bears fans everywhere. Bears fans, I'm with you. I feel the pain. And we see the humor in it as well. We'll have some fun with it. Talk some Cubs in our DeWindy City Cubs podcast coming up here as spring training roll along. Jock Peterson playing some good baseball. Different stuff from Jake Arrieta. A lot of Ron Santo memories on the show today, which I think you will enjoy. And just, yeah, keep the old head up here, Bears fans. There is better days coming than the Andy Dalton, Nick Foles, last year of Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy right in front of us. I guess there is some level of benefit that they didn't pay an enormous amount that makes you uncomfortable for Russell Wilson. But since I'm literally, I feel like one of the few people that doesn't want them to overpay and completely have a quarterback who's in his 30s and is not going to carry you and you have nothing to augment your roster with, which I'm leery of that plan. Maybe you can feel the benefit of that. Maybe they'll get lucky in the draft, but it's not exciting today at all. DeWindy City Podcast is brought to you by, you know it, you love it. That's right, Manscaped, the best in men's below the waist grooming. We love you, Manscaped, and we love the Lawnmower 3.0. It comes inside the brand new Perfect Package 3.0, which comes with everything you need to be trimmed, cut free, and of course, smelling really nice down there. Gotta have a good smelling situation. That's always of benefit. That's right. No sweaty, no stinky, just absolutely beautiful. The crop reliever. That's another thing they've got going on the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0. The crop preserver, keeping your family jewels from the sweating, smelling, sticking. That's right. I'm going deeper and deeper each week on our Manscaped love. Get 20% off free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. DeWindy City Podcast with Jordan Bernfield and Brian Beto starts right now.
Showtime.
So here's my thought on this. If you remember after 2008, when the Cubs got swept out of the playoffs by the Dodgers, we were told that they got to fix the bullpen. That's the problem. They got to fix the bullpen. So they went out and they signed Scott Ayer and Bob Howry. And right? And it feels like this is what they are. This is what Andy Dalton is. This is like you wanted Russell Wilson. You wanted Deshaun Watson, which, by the way, I would have told you, and I think you guys would agree, there's no way in hell they were ever getting either of those guys. But to end up with Andy Dalton is like you think you're getting this big star, and you get that. Maybe it's like Edwin Jackson.
That's an interesting angle because it's like they have to have wanted something really big. You know who it is for me right now? He's Jose Guzman. You let Greg Maddux leave for Atlanta because do you remember that?
Right, but Greg Maddux was at least a Cub. Yeah. Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, as far as I know, other than on Twitter memes, were never Bears.
I'm trying to think of the biggest Cubs free agent search.
I'm going with, and I like Jordan, you might have maybe the best. Also going more left-handed after 08 was the other thing, so that's why they got rid of like DeRosa and Fontenot full-time.
That worked out.
Oh, solid. This is a little bit different scenario. It's not the same. But I'm thinking what popped into my mind was a Jeremy Burnett. And the reason being is that the Cubs were obviously really good in 03, incredibly talented in 04, biggest disappointment in my lifetime. But they go out and they had to get rid of Sammy at that point. It seemed like it made sense. And they were getting pennies on the dollar for him. So they traded Gary Harrison Jr. for him. But they went out and got Jeremy Burnett, who was really good MLB player. And Andy Dalton's made, you know, three Pro Bowls. You can talk about, like, the Pro Bowl, like how much stock you put in making it, because there's so many like alternates that make it. But Trubisky made it, for crying out loud. But Jeremy Burnett kind of stands out as this like we just went from having all of these expectations, you know, and excitement about what this team was in 04. And then we land on a Jeremy Burnett and a Jerry Hairston Jr. And the team is just as mediocre as possible, which seems like the direction the Bears are once again heading
so
into.
So do you want my quick Jeremy Burnett story?
I do.
I do now.
Well, I think that you may have heard this, Beto, but so in 2005, yes, this is 2005, through details that are not necessary for this podcast, I got to be the Cubs bat boy for one game. In August of 2005.
Hashtag Jeff Bernfield.
Yes. And so I was in uniform, and I learned as the bat boy for the one game that you had to have three extra bats ready when any batter would go up in case they broke a bat, whatever, decided they wanted something else. So Jeremy Burnett is at the plate, hits a ball foul, and breaks his bat. So I run out there with his bats so that he can select a different one. And he goes, which one should I take? And I was, you know, I think 18, 19-ish at the time. I'm like, I don't know, man. It's your at bat. He goes, doesn't matter which one I take. I'm going to effing strike out anyways. And then goes up there, strikes out, and comes back towards the dugout and looks at me and he goes, I told you.
There's hold on a second. We have to break this down a little bit further. There's no way you looked at whatever you want, Burnett. You were like, you had to have been like, please, I don't know, sir. Jeremy, can I help you with?
No,
like,
I mean, I was very, very intimidated. I was like, I don't know, man. Like, it's your at bat. You take what you want. Like, you want me to select your bat?
Beto, what would you have said to Jeremy Burnett? Hey, Bedog, what bat should I use? What do you think you would have gone with? Because I know what David Cowell, whatever you want, pal.
Pal. I don't know. It's 05. I'm thinking that maybe you could go with a Jason Dubois bat, a Todd Hollinsworth bat. They were swinging
Jason
the stick
Dubois.
I don't know. Maybe that's what I would have went with.
It's really just fascinating for me to put myself in those shoes. What should I pick? What is this, the natural? And you're like Bobby Boucher coming out there with the... Pick me out a good one, Bobby. I know it's not Bobby Boucher.
Bobby Boucher was the water boy, right?
Yeah.
I think you were combining multiple movies
here.
Yeah,
you were an older version of...
Wonder Boy was the bat in The Natural.
Yeah, and Wonder Boy broke, and then Bobby had to pick him out a good one, and then Roy Hobbs lofted one into the lights, unfortunately for Jeremy Burnett.
That's rough. It's better than being a little kid in League of Their Own, though. You know, because nobody liked that kid, remember?
That kid was terrible.
When Tom Hanks whips the glove at him, so at least you weren't that. It's better to be associated with the Wonder Boy than the Natural, for sure. I will say that. But you just got to look at him and be like, listen, this isn't Miller Park. I don't know what you Mickey Mouse operation you had in Milwaukee where the Bat Boy picks your things, but you're with the Cubs now.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was terrified. I was like, I'm not picking your bat, dude. Like, you got to – whatever you strike out with is up to you. Jeremy Burnett, Jeremy.
Well, yeah. Poor guy. I mean, that guy had like he wasn't even like that, but he just like he filled in the void that was just like 60 home runs for three of the past like six seasons.
I think so Jeremy Burnett, by the way, Beto, you're right on it. To answer Carm's question, that is a great comparison because like Jeremy Burnett was a decent player.
Yeah, he was.
One of the best in the moment. Andy Dalton, Nick Foles, who was the Cubs compare? You only had one, though. Who else is on that team that could be the other quarterback? Burnett and who?
I was trying to think. So I was trying to think of the times the Cubs struck out in free agency.
Oh, you know what?
And what would be? Mike Hampton stands out when they struck out. Did they replace him with someone?
That was a great
Todd Hundley, does he count?
He's
Carlos Beltran.
It was a kind of a high profile signing. He just didn't work out.
Remember, they wanted Carlos Beltran, and they were one of the teams that was going to go after Carlos Beltran, and they offered him $75 million, and he ended up signing for 120 with the Mets.
Yes.
And Theo wanted, was it Anibal Sanchez from the Marlins who ended up with the Tigers?
Edwin Jackson.
No.
No, but that's where they ended up in place, right?
I know.
Yes.
Hoops.
No, I thought that was
But it's not like Anibal Sanchez was Russell Wilson, right? Like, it wasn't like, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe they missed out on Anibal Sanchez.
No, but they were super excited about it at the time. They'd done all their research. They'd made a really big pick for Anibal, and then he had one good season and went in the tank. But
it is funny, though, by the way, how in 2021, this is how news works, that the Bears really never had a chance at Russell Wilson. The only reason why this is even a thing is because there was a tweet from Adam Schefter saying that one of the four teams he would consider being traded to was the Bears. It's not like the Bears, it's not like he could have really come here unless there was a trade, which would have been extremely difficult to pull off. But in the minds of Bears fans, he was coming.
I mean, I still believe that he's coming. I can't. I'm not giving it up on whatever the today is.
When does Seattle play the Bears here?
That's probably when he's coming. That's true.
But, Russell Wilson revenge game.
Yeah.
So the Bears are getting him. It's happening. I don't know what you're talking about. Andy Dalton's a backup. I already spun zone this. I know this is a Cubs podcast, but I spun zone it to the point that right after the Bears signed Dalton, the Texans signed Tyrod Taylor for $12.5 million too. He's also a backup. So Dalton's just making backup money. He's providing nice depth for Russ. I've already convinced myself.
There it is.
Great point.
So who will have a better year this year? Andy Dalton or Jock Peterson? Let's go there. Jock Peterson at podcast taping has an OPS of 1,780, a batting average of 500. He's got total home runs right now for Jock is 5, 9 RBIs, 29 total bases, MVP of the spring, Jock Peterson or Andy Dalton. Who do you got? It's dead silence. Nobody can even believe how good Jock Peterson is.
I mean, it's Jock. let's.
Is it?
I mean, let's talk about. I know it's your favorite stat, Mark, but WAR.
Oh.
I mean, we'll just boil it down to that. I mean, Jock is proven over his career to be a better than average starter than a replacement player. Like, he's over 2 WAR consistently throughout his career. If I'm not mistaken, you can fact check me on that, but. Andy Dalton, if he was, there was a football equivalent to that. Do you think he's better than the average starter? No, he's a fine football player, but he's not. He's in the bottom 10 starting quarterbacks in the league. If he does start for the Bears, Jock is definitely not in the bottom 10 left fielders, I wouldn't think.
I agree. I mean, Jock Peterson is a good major league outfielder. Yeah, he's good. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's a great player, but I think. You might argue that he has the ceiling of being fringe great, right? I mean, he's still pretty young.
Yeah. Huge.
I mean, he's a young guy, not as young as he was before. Obviously, like when he came up, everyone was like, oh, my God, he's going to be incredible at 19. I think he's 27 now-ish, something like that?
25.
Okay, so he's even younger. So the point is, the best baseball for Jock Peterson might still even be ahead of him. Yeah. I actually liked that signing when they got him. I didn't like that. It meant Kyle Schwarber was gone.
Carmen wrong on the year. Born April 21st, 1992. He's going to be 29.
All right. So he's older than...
Quick 4 short years off. That's it.
In the general ballpark.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, he's still young enough that he could be good for 3-4 years.
Correct.
Absolutely. He's entering his prime, and this year he's going to have a phenomenal year, and then the Cubs are going to lose him to a team that's good.
Correct. Or they'll trade him midseason if he's good and the team is bad.
That would be amazing if that happens. If they get anything for Jock Peterson, it's a win. All right, I got beef that I want to get out there. Beto, I think you're actually going to be with me on this. Jordan, I think you're with me. It doesn't really matter. But I'm listening to everyone's reaction this week to the new rules coming in that are going to be tried out at AAA, AA, and Single A, and people are getting bent out of shape, some people, that the shift will be going away because you have to have, in AA this year, you have to have your feet on the infield dirt. So you can't, it's going to be less likely that teams shift, and then people are saying, like, the shifting is the natural progression of baseball, and it should be allowed. No one is ever going to say in the history of baseball if they get rid of the shift, who's sitting in their seat, eating their peanuts and Cracker Jacks and drinking their Bud Light, Miller Light, whatever, man, I really miss the shift. I loved it.
So I'm surprised, by the way, that you think that you question where I would fall on this, because I think it's great. I don't like the shift. I think it takes away a ton of hits, and nobody wants to see a guy rifle one into shallow right field only to have it fielded by a second baseman who's 40 feet into right and throw out the runner at first, which seemingly happened to Kyle Schwarber 7 out of 10 at bats in his Cubs career.
Which just straight sucks. But Beto's a smart baseball guy, and so are you, Jordan. So that's when, and I'm not a smart baseball guy. I want Sean Dunston back in my lineup, and I don't care if his OPS is 270. I like exciting baseball players. Bedog, is this going to bother you, man? It was so great when the Cubs showed their brilliance.
They're not doing it for the fans. It's because the team that does it thinks it gives them a better chance to win a game. I'm not disagreeing. I actually am kind of indecisive on this. I get the whole argument for it. We're just let's pretend, it's the NFL defensively. You can line up, you can blitz 11 guys, a 46 defense, or you could sit back. It's whatever you think gives you the best chance. Now that said, I agree. There hasn't been adjustments to try to beat the shift aesthetically. I know there's been a lot of said, and Theo's new role is to help make the game more entertaining. And I'm good with that, because right now I agree with the team's philosophies to be three outcomes to an extent and, take a lot of walks and stuff like that. But it certainly takes away some of the enjoyment from a fan perspective, I would think. So anything I guess they could do to try to inject some sort of life into the game and increasing contact, if that means banning the shift, then I guess I'm open to it. But I am pretty indecisive. And Jordan, to your point, it feels like it happened every time to Kyle Schwarber. The one time that it didn't happen was the only time that matters. He hit the ball in the teeth of that shift leading off the 10th in game 7.
Damn straight.
Somehow it snuck through.
You are correct, and that was wonderful. But no, I think, Beto, everything that you said is correct. My whole thing is that there is one small part of me that would be conflicted, which is that the idea that baseball has always had the problem of thinking regressively, right? Baseball always thinks man, wasn't it great when we just went out and the bleachers were empty and we had our $5 hot dog and beer and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're one of those guys.
We're stealing bases.
Right.
Going crazy. Yeah.
So I think then progress has been good for baseball, but I think that maybe we've gotten to a point of so much progress in such a short period of time that I think now the greater minds are thinking is this what we want going forward? Right. So I think the guys like Theo, who are really smart and progressive thinkers, are looking at this and going, when was baseball most exciting? And some people say, obviously it's a little before our time, Beto, but some people would say it's the 80s when, it was much more contact-driven and stolen bases. And I'm fine with that. My whole thing is I just think that the extreme shifts take away from the idea of what baseball is supposed to be, right? If the idea is that we can just take your data, look at the 6 places or 8 places where you most frequently hit the ball and have a person standing there to field it, then you will never get any hits unless you completely change what you do as a hitter. And I don't know that that is the best thing for baseball either.
Yeah.
So I think I'm for banning the shift overall.
And since you brought up the 80s, and if you go back and Cub fans, just go
turf fields, high socks,
turf fields, high socks, and no one wore shirts. If you go back and watch the Samberg game highlights, everyone in the bleachers has
everyone.
Right, they're all shirtless. Everyone smells and is getting skin cancer, and it's beautiful.
So when do we go back to that? That feels like the furthest thing away ever.
I'm in quarantine. I'm not, my summer bod's not ready yet. I'm not quite sure I can pull that off for Wrigley in the bleachers.
Does anybody take their shirt off in the bleachers anymore? That was the thing. You walked in, you didn't even have a shirt.
It's funny you say that, because I watched that game's always on MLB Network, and I remember throwing it on a year or two ago, and that was the thing that stood out more than anything else, and I had never really noticed it before. Like, without even you or somebody else instigating, I was like, man, literally no one has their shirt on. So it's unbelievable. It was, like, worse than, like, those, like, Bears fans in, like, you know, the 80s and 90s. They were trying to prove how tough they are so they get, you know, hypothermia from sitting outside in January.
Those were amazing people. They really...
That does sound like it'd be right up your alley. I could definitely see a shirtless Carm at Wrigley, you know, out in left field. You have, you know, some of those, like, the Cubs mid-80s out there, you screaming out in left field, you yelling at Willie McGee, who's out for the Cardinals in the outfield.
Carm, like, wearing a mesh hat and jean shorts and no shirt.
I hate to do this to myself right now, but I will. I always hated the bleachers. Like, why would you want to sit somewhere where there's no seat back? I need a nice club box seat. Those were like $20 back then.
This is Highland Park, Carm,
yes,
coming out right now.
There's not a chance. There's not a chance I'm sitting in the bleachers with those smelly people. But I would sit in a nice seat or not a nice seat if I was in the sun, and I wouldn't wear my shirt. Like, it wasn't just the bleachers that were shirtless. If you went down the right field line and you were in the sun, you took your shirt off. You were getting a tan. That was the whole point.
Oh, my God.
That's what it was.
That's so crazy. It's so funny, too, because now we're obviously somewhere in between. But this is, like, goes to your point, Jordan, about just going from one extreme to the next. We all this regression and all this progress is that we went from just, like, 40 years prior to that to everyone showing up to the ballpark in a full suit, like a three-piece suit.
That's true.
Yes. And then everyone was naked.
There's no, like, actual in-between. They go right from three-piece suit to zero clothes on.
Yes.
And now we're at least in, like, a middle ground of wearing, like, team apparel. Or maybe, you know, like a standard, like, frat guy, like, tank top with a vintage Cub shirt.
The bucket hat.
You know, pastel pants and, like, the sandals or whatever.
Also,
so I'm clearly removed from what's cool. But,
as I'm listening to you guys describe this, I'm thinking, how did the pandemic not happen in the 80s when there were 40,000 people basically naked and drunk packed into a ballpark every single day?
Seriously, the being a Cub in the 80s, it's day games. Everyone's getting drunk and suntan. Then they're stumbling into Murphy's and looking at Mark Grace. Will you please go home with me for? I mean, my God.
What was the famous? Was it Morgana? The famous
Marla Collins
fan that used to go on the field that would try to kiss everyone.
The kissing bandit.
Yeah, I've heard of her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was
and there was no health crisis then.
Well, and just to bring it back to Jordan and Jeremy Burnitz, I mean, we went from having Marla Collins sitting there in Playboy giving the balls to the umpires to Burnfield and Burnitz. I mean,
that's a big step down.
Look at the evolution of baseball right there.
And now the shift. All right. Anything standing out on the field for you gentlemen here? As I watched some Cubby highlights. I'll tell you what, John Bucciambi is going to be fantastic. Len Casper.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
I mean, the guy is, they had Ian Happ mic'd up the other day and having a solid convo. And I don't even know, like, I saw one clip making the way through Twitter. He's talking to Bryant and Rizzo in the dugout. I'm not sure if it was real or wasn't real. They were referencing, What's your favorite baseball movie that I think is terrible? Sandlot.
How can you hate the Sandlot?
Because
that's a terrible take.
He's an earlier kid. He didn't grow up in the 90s.
Yeah,
so
fair enough.
Everything's bad that wasn't in the 70s.
Stupid movie and, like, the ball. And I never got it.
Please reject this take completely.
I could ask you like about some terrible Bulls center from the early 80s that averaged 1 point per game, and you'll love him.
What?
But if I tell you, like, an actual movie that's fantastic, you'll just be like, that's just so terrible.
Right.
Like, your subjective opinions on the stuff like that kind of concern me.
I'm the most biased individual of all time, at least, but I do own it. Juwan Oldham, Elston Turner. I could just start naming random Bulls, pre-Jordan.
You just did.
I know. like your generation, you all love Sandlot. I'm more of a, you know, give me Bull Durham, give me Major League, give me.
Bull Durham is maybe my favorite baseball movie ever.
Major League was a fantastic movie.
Right, these were great movies.
Yes.
But the
Sandlot's a different type of movie.
Yes.
The coming of age, it's more of a kid's movie.
Okay,
Bull Durham is not a kid's movie.
I was a Bad News Bears, you were a Sandlot. How's that?
Fair enough. I think that's a good comparison.
Enough. Yes.
You do like the Bad News Bears, though, please, right?
Yeah. It's a good movie. I didn't love it, but it's a good movie. I enjoyed it. A bunch of
12-year-olds drinking beers. What's not to like? Right?
Yeah. Rudy Rudiger and Kelly Leak.
Rudy Rudiger is from Rudy.
Yes.
Who was the fat kid in?
Rudy Rudiger was literally Sean Astin. Yes. How do we know this and you don't?
I don't know. I started drinking when I heard about Dalton, so I'm like an hour deep. Rudy was the catcher in Bad News Bears. Rudy! But it wasn't
Kelly
Rudiger.
Kelly was the cool guy, right?
Kelly was the cool kid who was smoking cigarettes and like was having relations with Tatum O'Neal, and they were both 10. But like, and everybody everyone thought that was okay back then. By the way, if you go, if you go back into Butterfinger, Bad News Bears, like you've got this 12-year-old at the yoga studio hitting on adults and trying to like get him to go on a date with him. Like, this is a little awkward. But like back then,
and how do they let Walter Matthau near those kids with some of the habits that he had?
Chico's bail bonds for the jerseys, getting drunk on the mound and passing out. He's drunk. It's
good stuff. Yes.
Different world. Okay. So that's my big takeaway. Ian Happ is good on television. I don't trust him in the leadoff hole, but that's what's going to happen.
Well, what about Jake? I mean, I watched a little of. I did watch a Pat Hughes broadcast on Marquee Sports Network. I have to tell you, Jake, here's my one takeaway, because you guys know I don't put much stock in these spring training things. Have either of you guys watched Jake pitch at all in spring training yet?
I've seen him.
Second game I watched a little bit.
Okay, because he's
the first game I don't think was on TV.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing here? Because I am seeing a pitcher who, because he doesn't throw as hard anymore, has a little Kyle Hendricks mixed into his game now, right? He's throwing a lot of like backdoor changeups and slower pitches, but they seem pretty effective. So what's going to be interesting, I think, from a nerdy Cubs fan perspective in 2021 is watching the man who looks exactly the same with the same beard and the same intimidating presence, but the pitcher is going to be completely different. Right? Like, am I overstating this?
No.
He's different. That.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And it's a good thing. It just shows kind of the evolution because, I mean, we've seen guys that don't change anything, that just the natural progression, they lose the velocity, which was what made them great. And if they don't change anything, they get lit up. And, you know, Jake's obviously struggled, but maybe he's started to realize he's got to go about it a little bit different way. I'm looking at it from a and this guy never left his team, and they're not similar pitchers as far as what their arsenals were when they were peaking. But I look at someone like Adam Wainwright, too, which just kind of pains me to say, but that dude was just gassing it up there, was considered kind of a power pitcher, not like a Noah Syndergaard, but he touched mid-90s, had the hard curveball. Obviously, he was a closer the first year they won it in 06, and he somehow stuck around and is pretty effective, and he's not even topping 90 miles an hour, and it's because he learned how to change the way he pitched and put more movement on his slow moving fastball and things of that nature. So, and I think it's just a good example for someone to look at Jake and see if he can become something like that.
Let me throw out some trivia here. Not trivia. Let me throw out some predictions, and we'll see who wins at the end of the year. We'll just do Burnfield versus Beto right now.
Where's Jake Fine? That was for Beto.
In our first podcast back in 2010, we had a game called literally that, Burnfield versus Beal.
And our producer, Jake Fine, would throw out the questions.
Jake Fine.
Yeah. Yes.
Hashtag Jake Fine. Come on back, Jake Fine.
He's a great man.
What's your most relevant, interesting way to measure pitching success? Because I know you guys don't want to do wins, and you probably don't want to do ERA. Beto, do you have a stat that I want to do Arrieta versus Davies and who you're taking? What stat do you want to pick? You want to do whip? You want to do FIP? You want to do BABIP?
I would do a FIP.
You
want to
do
a FIP?
You want to do a FIP? Jordan, yeah. You want to get basis on FIP?
I mean, we could do a
or
FIP.
Or ERA. I don't care. I'll do anything.
ERA or FIP is fine. I mean, like, I'm not that crazy about every little statistic.
Okay,
so
let's
do
ERA. One. Let's just okay. do ERA.
ERA
let's...
minus.
ERA.
Where are we at with that? I'm kidding. I would do that. I know. I'm not kidding about that part.
I mean, I would just base this on wins. But let's just go. I will fight somebody who tells me wins don't matter. Nah, it's completely irrelevant. Yeah, really.
Oh, I will send you my address. You can come here right now and we can duke it out because they don't.
It's completely irrelevant. The guy that somehow I don't know how it is, but there's like always that guy when there's a runner on second in the fifth inning in a one run game. He somehow always gives up that base hit, Yu Darvish, and doesn't get the win. Okay,
guy was second, Cy Young, killing him.
I know.
Fifth inning, two out hits.
Yeah, there's a reason they traded him. See you later, you. You're gonna break down. And we all know that you're a head case, and you're going to – okay. But getting back to reality, ERA.
And your bad takes on wins.
Yes.
And the Sandlot.
God, I love wins and the Sandlot. All right, ERA, Davies or Arrieta?
Davies. Sorry, I went first because it's obvious.
I would say probably – I'd say Arrieta probably.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go back on that.
I mean, this is very exciting. ERA. Adbert, Alzolay, or Alec Mills? Adbert, Alzolay.
I think it's Alzolay.
Alzolay. Adbert, Alzolay.
You know, you're just being nice.
Alec.
I am just being nice. Yes.
I appreciate it. This is a Cubs podcast. I'm building up my Alzolay knowledge as we speak. Alec Mills, Alec with a C.
Isn't that how it's usually spelled?
I think there could be a or perhaps a, some might think it's an Alex Mills. But
got it.
That's not
like a Kerry Woods.
Right.
Ryan Sandberg.
God, yeah. I love Ryan Sandberg.
Yeah.
This is a very long hesitation here on Mills and Alzolay.
I would go. I'll
let Jordan
go
first because
I'll go Mills.
You're going Mills.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say Alzolay because I think that's better for the Cubs, but I think objectively I'm going to go with the Mills, both on the FIP and the ERA side. You didn't ask for the FIP, but I'm giving it anyway.
Alzolay is talking a big game right now, by the way. Have you guys noticed that? He's very excited about what Alzolay.
I hope he's great. I just
I don't think it's good. Shut up. You've never done anything. You've been terrible. Every time you're out there, it's like a miracle that you get through an inning.
So what do you want him to do? Go, I suck? I'm not saying anything?
I hope I can contribute. Give
Mr.
Me,
Press Conference that, himself.
Mr. Press Conference himself is back right now.
Oh,
yes.
God.
Stop. Don't have any confidence in a press conference right now. I want you particularly to say, I'm just here to help the ball club. That's all we want out of an Alzolay. I'm trying
Bull Durham cliches. You're back to Bull Durham.
Yes.
One day at a time. Lord willing, things will work out.
I've done absolutely nothing but embarrass myself whenever I've gotten an opportunity. Am I missing something? Was Adbert Alzolay ever good?
For like four innings, one
but
game.
Thank you.
He's had some good moments. He also hasn't given like a full opportunity. He's been injured.
Yeah.
Right,
so.
Exactly. His arm falls off every time he goes out there like, I don't – this whole Cubby philosophy right now just feels very – we're going to pitch to contact. We're going to be doing everything.
Well, what are they supposed to do? They got a bunch of guys throwing 60 miles an hour.
Right.
Right.
Right. Say nothing.
They can't do anything but pitch to contact.
Just say
they're not striking anybody out.
Just say we're hoping for a miracle and that's
it. We're hoping that they unjuice the ball is what they're hoping for.
Yeah.
We're hoping that we score some runs because if you do look at it, like, look, you've got Jacques in left, you've got Happ in center, you've got, never mind, in right, you've got Rizzo, you've got Baez, you've got a budding Nico Horner.
Hayward had a good year, and you're just going to skim over, like, never mind in right because you're focusing on the contract from 5 years ago?
He's terrible. He's terrible.
Oh, my God.
He's objectively not terrible. Here's the thing.
These takes the last 5 minutes have been something.
If Jason Hayward's career was flipped in terms of the years with the Cubs, no one would think he's terrible. The only reason people think he's terrible is because it started terrible.
Beto, and
right?
Burnfield.
Am I right?
No. Hold on a second. No, you were.
He was not bad last year. He's not.
Look at his numbers last year.
Yes.
He was. Yes, right. He had an okay season. What exactly were his numbers? Hold on. Let's pull them up. Every time that guy,
especially when they didn't lead him off,
that was terrible. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So right, I guess we'll give him a pass on. On leading off. Hold on.
Well, let's
I want to have a bet on the table for the entire season. Every time
you bet with batting average, I'm hanging up.
No, I want to have a bet every time anytime he gets on base or does anything good, that goes into the Beto Burnfield Hayward is good column, and we'll put how about 2 quarters in the kitty for every time he does something good. And I will just take 1 quarter for every time he grounds the ball to the right side.
That's going to happen 250 times
this
year.
That's all he does. He rolls the ball to the right side. It's how do you have any enjoyment watching this guy play?
He is one of the most incredibly talented defensive outfielders.
Here comes the defensive outfield. Right.
Well, probably in Cubs
history. But
how can
you not enjoy that? He's also like the best, along with Bryant, the best base runner. His instincts are good.
And this is the point that Carmel liked the most. He gave a speech for $184 million that won him the World Series.
Yes, correct. He's worth
it. I got to speak in Carm language. That's a good point.
He was for what he did during the rain delay.
The speech was worth the money.
Great signing.
If the Cubs had to say, we'd pay him $180 million for a World Series if you give one great speech in the 10th inning, they would sign for that.
In 50 games last year and 147 at-bats, the great Jason Hayward scored 20 runs, had 39 hits, a robust...
You're just cherry-picking numbers that don't
I'm reading every
right,
number!
What
there's no cherry-picking.
What was his on base?
I'm picking the numbers. I'm going through his whole stats. He hits... How many doubles did he have, Beto?
I don't know, 10?
Six.
15?
He had 6 pathetic doubles. How many triples did he have? Doesn't matter. 2. How many homers did he have last year? In 150 at-bats...
I'm going to go
say
7.
Like 7, 8.
Okay, he had 6 homers. Okay, so if he had 500 at bats, he would have had 25 dongs. I mean, it's not terrible. 22 RBIs. He walked 30 times. How many strikeouts?
Yeah, how many at bats he have?
He had 147 at bats.
I'm going to go 32.
Beto?
I would say. That's not a bad guess. I would say his contact rate's probably 80%, or whatever that is.
I mean, what am I supposed to do the math on the fly on the contact rate? I can't even give you a good take
under
on
40, 35.
I'm calling him Alzolay. You want contact rate or Alzolay? He struck out 37 times. What was his batting average last year?
My guess is 260.
260, 270. Yeah.
265. Okay, and his on-base was 392. He slugged 456, so he 846. It's the one time he's been over 800 as a Cub.
Okay, but that's not bad.
840, that's good. That's really
good. I understand
good.
It's the one time he's done it. He was 772 the year before, 731, 715.
We're not talking about that. You were literally just like, let's glance over in right field. And I was like, he was really good last year, and you said, no, he wasn't. And he got 846 or whatever OPS, whatever you said.
In summary, I think Beto and I have clearly proven we are correct on this.
This isn't Beto versus Burnfield anymore. This is Beto and Burnfield.
Versus the
Carm. What was his WAR last year, Beto, your favorite
state? I don't know. It was 50 games.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Yeah.
So extrapolate it over, first of all, 60 games, and let's extrapolate it out to
extrapolate.
1.3.
Where was WAR? It depends on what was his WAR, like 1.5?
1.3.
Yeah. All right. So he would have been around a four WAR. That's not bad.
That's good.
4 WAR. Right. His best as a Cub was 2.3 in his second season.
That was bad.
His worst was 1.16. He's done it twice, by the way. He's had 2.16s, a 2.3, and a 2.0.
Listen, in 2016.
He smells. It's a great guy. Like him talking about Hank Aaron, I could listen to it for 1,000 hours. If I could replace myself as a dad, if I ever became one, and make him the father, great. I mean, tremendous person. Love the way he goes about his day and gives everything into it. He can't play baseball. How much is he worth on the open market?
He can't play baseball.
What's he worth on the open market right now? What is he worth? What do you think he would get?
Times WAR. I mean,
Does he get $10 million? No way.
Easily.
You think he gets paid more than Jock?
So if you're saying his WAR is close to four, there's numbers out there that basically project the dollar amount per WAR per win above replacement that you get, and his would say a decent amount, especially on a short term deal. He would get over $10 million.
I honestly don't think he would at this point. I think that what you're saying from a math perspective be fine, but I think from a perception perspective, I don't see him getting $10 million now. I don't.
In this climate, fine.
I think he's getting $7 million.
Two, 3 years ago, yes. 2-3 years ago, after a season like this year,
Let me ask you this.
Like after is.
And by the way, neither of you are, but I think most people who support Jason Hayward are the same people that support Mitchell Trubisky. I swear to God, they're on the same bus riding down the same street.
Hold on. Not supporting Trubisky.
I know you're not.
Yeah.
I know you're not, but
yeah.
I think that Mike North
loves
Trubisky.
I do have
Trubisky.
Both a Hayward and a Trubisky jersey, though. Just throwing that out there.
You do?
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you it's the same
but
person.
But I got it with his rookie year. I gambled. I lost. Jesus.
I love
I don't feel bad about my Hayward jersey, though. I love the guy.
That'd be a good eBay sell.
This is what I do love about you, by the way, and I need more of this Beto in my life. The optimistic Beto, like, things are going to work out, Chicago sports take, is I could use a little bit more of it.
I think it's refreshing.
It is. It's like there's an optimism. The Bulls are going to be great, even though they're not.
I like the Bulls. I like where they're at.
Exactly.
I do think the Bears are a disaster. You don't ask me about that. But I like the Bulls.
Right.
I like the Cubs. I like Jason Hayward.
Right.
I'm maybe next week. I do have a concern. We could tease it up for next week about the Cubs that I wanted to get into. Maybe.
No, I want to hear your concern because you are one of my positive people in life, so I want to know what concerns you.
It's Craig Kimbrell.
Another signing. That could be Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Not really.
They're both making, he's making 14 a year. Dalton's 10, 13 with incentives. My concern is, I actually think the Cubs have an underrated bullpen in general. I think it might take them a little bit to like figure out their roles, but I think they're actually going to turn into a solid pen once they figure out and enough of those guys work out. But I don't think it matters, or it doesn't matter nearly as much if a Kimbrell isn't good. And I'm not like necessarily worried about his results in spring training, but even like Ross was talking the other day, and he even sounded kind of concerned about where Kimbrell was at. And I know Kimbrell finished really strongly, but worried about some of the bite on his pitches. So that's my concern, because I think it's such a domino effect in the bullpen that if he's not great or good, even just good, how about that, then I think that the bullpen's in trouble and figuring out what their roles are, because I think if he stabilizes the ninth inning, they could be pretty solid, which they're gonna have to be if their rotation's not, top third in the league, which likely it's not.
Well, last year they got bailed out by Jeremy Jeffress, who's having personal problems, and I'm not sure what happened there, but he was a savior for Kimbrell last year.
Yeah, that's a great point. I maybe this is just me just trying to be, I don't know, like protecting myself or defense mechanism. In my mind, Craig Kimbrell is terrible. Like, I don't even have...
He's Hayward.
Well, like, in my mind, there is no scenario in which he's great. So I've already resigned to the fact that it's not going to work out. And if it does, that would be icing on the cake. I'd be thrilled. But, like, if you made me decide today, is Craig Kimbrell going to have a good year, I would put all of my chips in the no basket.
100%. And
I can't blame you.
He was cooked when he got here. There was a reason he was let go, and he somehow, some way, righted the ship at the back end of last year when they took him out of the closer role, and he had like 9 good games with nobody in the stands, and he's pitching in the 6th, 7th, and 8th.
So I have a little bit of a Carmen take on Craig Kimbrell.
Oh, such a good take. So, I can't wait.
Beto, you're going to laugh at me about this. One of the things, this is like one of my sports pet peeves, okay? If you're a closer and you've got your own song when you come out and you got all this histrionics like Kimbrell does with the elbow arm waggle thing, then you can't suck. Because when you put together all this dramatic flair because you're coming out to pitch, then you better be great. It's like, remember, who was the closer who I'm forgetting his name, who looked like the caveman for the Giants when they won the World Series?
Yeah.
Wilson.
Brian Wilson.
Brian Wilson. Yes. I could make so many jokes about that.
I thought you were going Greg Gagne or the Dodgers.
Yes. So, like, remember Brian Wilson lying in bed just like Brian Wilson did. And he would come out of the pen with the beard and the music and the whole thing. And he was good, right? So it was a whole – it was like a dramatic thing. And when Craig Kimbrell was younger and he did all that stuff, it was great. And the same thing with Gagne and the same thing with some of these other guys. But when you have the whole – ballpark rocking because you're coming in with the song and the sprinting and the arm waggle and you're giving up bombs, it's a bad look. It is a bad look, and that's what Craig Kimbrell has been on the Cubs.
It'd be amazing.
Listen.
It'd be amazing at opening day if he comes in from the pen. They're playing the Pirates. They're up 4-3. He goes into his whole like arm thing and stares in, and everybody who's sitting behind home plate really just gives him the finger.
And Jordy Mercer hits like a tattoos one out of the street.
God, listen, I know what you think I'm going to say, but I don't disagree. I think it's a good take.
Okay, because like you,
I think if you're going to have that, and like closers, it's generally closers, right? They have that kind of shtick, and
yes.
Part of the reason why he got the shtick, I know it was like, hey, my arm was hurting, it kind of felt good, and I just stuck with it. That was his thing when he was good. So it's like, but it comes to kind of an awkward thing, like, you know, am I good?
No.
You know, like, can I pull back now, or can I not do that anymore? Like, when do I stop doing that? Do I is it? I don't know, but I don't think it's a bad take. You have Gagne and Wilson and like Mariano Rivera had Enter Sandman. Everyone could pull that off.
Like, right. Like what
Kevin Gregg and Tony Fossos aren't coming out to Enter Sandman.
Kevin Gregg.
It's only a Mariano Rivera thing.
Yes. So also it is seared in my brain, and this is maybe because, I mean, this probably says more about me than anything else. Do you remember the game the Cubs played in Williamsport when they were at the Little League World Series, but they played at the Williamsport Crosscutters Field, Bowman Field, right? And they're all in those awful, ugly uniforms that they made them wear for that Little League World Series weekend. And Rizzo hit the bomb off the left field scoreboard, and it was Sunday Night Baseball, and it's great, 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 right? Then they bring in Kimbrell, and like there's not enough people in the crowd, so the crowd mic is loud, and you just hear the home runs that Kimbrell is giving up, or like thwack, and it's just flying out of the park like missiles. And I was like, we paid $40 million for this guy?
Wasn't he like one-hopping the backstop too?
Yes. He was so bad. And I'm like, what is happening? This guy stinks. Get him out of here.
Didn't he get the win in that game though, or something like that? Didn't they tie it or something?
Yes, he
and
was so
and then they
so,
ended up getting the wins?
He was
because
so
wins
bad.
Because wins are such a valuable statistic for pitchers.
Yes. God,
I do remember it's that. Like, there's that funny meme of that picture of Jed and Theo from Miller Park 2 years ago when he gave up the game tying bombs, and they're just like they're both are just staring with their hands over their mouth. So that came into a meme. But and poor Kimbrell, I hope he goes out and just shoves it right.
Like,
up our, you know,
imagine
what,
if Carlos Marmol had like music and some kind of cheer, and the crowd was doing all this stuff, and then he comes in and he throws like three curveballs to the first base dugout, and they start
wild
rolling around back there. It's like, come on, man, you can't have all the stuff and then stink.
Yeah, it is a lot of pressure. Now I'm looking up Tony Fox. I don't know where.
Like, imagine Jeff Fassero in 2001 having all of that.
Jeff Fassero had a good year.
He did.
Jeff Fassero did have a good year. Great expo. All-time expo.
Fassero, Farnsworth, and who was the other
one? Flash Gordon, the three Fs.
And Flash.
Flash Gordon was the man. Yes. I love that, dude. And then Jeff Fassero, 2 years later, gives up that walk-off grand slam to Sammy at Wrigley as part of the Cardinals. So yes. Jeff Fassero's got a special place in my heart.
That was my first midlife crisis in my early 20s. I drove out to San Diego to see that team play. Jason Bure was on the mound. He pitched incredible. They were up 2-0.
Jason Bure.
And they went to Fassero or one of those idiots when Don Baylor absolutely should not have, and he blew the game, and they got swept in the series, and the season basically was over. I remember being in Wrigley when they got Fred McGriff, and everybody went like they were flashing it on the board.
I went to the first game with the Crime Dog was on the team.
I mean, Pete, we thought we had it when we got the Crime Dog.
Yes.
It was like Babe Ruth had come to the Cubs, and then
Tom Amansky's AAU videos.
That is we need to have this discussion later time. That is the 01 Cubs are hands down my favorite Cubs team that never did anything.
Was that Ricky Gutierrez?
Like make the playoffs.
Or was that
Gutierrez. That's the play where Mongo McMichael got kicked out. Sano started swearing on the air on WGN, and Mike was muted because Gutierrez got caught in the rundown, and that base hit from Girardi. It was the same game Angel Hernandez threw Mongo McMichael out of the stadium.
That play with Gutierrez, I mean, Pat Hughes should be in the Hall of Fame anyway.
Yes,
but
that call alone
puts him in the Hall of Fame.
I'm putting it on the end of the podcast, so stay tuned for that. Got Angel Hernandez and Mongo McMichael.
0-1 Cubs.
Did Sano really swear on the air? What did he say?
Yeah. You can turn it up.
Yeah.
You can't hear it. You hear it over Pat Hughes' microphone. So it's not through Sano's mic. You can hear it through, because he pounds his fist on the table in front of him when Gutierrez gets caught in the rundown. And then I can't say what it is, or I guess I could.
You can.
It's a podcast, but I'm not gonna. He drops an F-bomb, I think. And that's just one of the two things he kind of comes out and says. And then he's just, you can clear, just disheveled. And then obviously when Gutierrez somehow scores on that same play, he just loses his mind. Jordan's point, it's maybe Pat Hughes' best call ever.
Ronnie, there is a cough button for you to hit.
Yeah. I do remember him losing his mind when they I miss Ronnie.
Speaking of, by the way, we were talking about the Bears an hour ago when this podcast started. Maybe the best thing that happened in the last Bears season was whoever on Twitter made the mashup video of Javon Wims dropping that touchdown in New Orleans and putting Santo in there. That was the funniest thing of the season.
That was strong.
Yes.
Good that ball. Was really so good.
He dropped the ball. Oh, no! He dropped the ball!
I was at that game with Jason Bell, former reporter, sitting there in great seats at County Stadium. He starts jumping up and down. I'm like, he dropped it. He literally thought the game was over. I'm like, no, dude. He dropped it. There are three runners that are scoring right in front of your face in these great seats.
Burnett might have been one of them.
Jeremy Burnett.
That's a great way to end this podcast.
It is. Thank you for listening to the Windy City Cubs podcast, coming out at you every week, normally on Mondays, but this week on Tuesday, because you haven't exactly gotten addicted to it being on Mondays yet. So, hey, what's one day later? Thank you so much.
Nobody's listening anyway.
We had actually some decent numbers last week. So,
good.
We appreciate it, everybody.
Did the listeners from India, were they still there?
I think they were still there. Of course.
Shout out to the India listeners.
Our average listeners stick with us. We get about like 15% listen to 25% of the podcast.
All right.
So 0% are listening right now. But we're still having fun. And I don't believe the numbers. You're out there.
They dropped off after the Jason Hayward take, probably this time.
Hopefully they bailed out before I called him Albert Alzolay. But perhaps they didn't.
The Cubs in their traveling uniforms wearing the
excuse me.
Dark blue shirts. How's that cough button working, Ron?
I hit the wrong button.
I couldn't tell. I could barely hear a thing.
This program was recorded on tape for a live audience.
4-4 tie in the ninth. And the pitch. Girardi lines from the left side of the base. Gutierrez around third. He's going to try to score. The throw by Shepard.
Oh.
Gutierrez falls down. He gets back to second. The throw to second, not in time. Now they're running Girardi back toward first. Girardi being run toward second. Now Gutierrez gets back to third. The throw to first for Girardi. He's in the rundown. Gutierrez trying to score. The throw to the plate. He slides. He's safe. Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win. Unbelievable play. Cubs win. The Cubs win.
And the field is in great condition. At this moment, a gentleman has stood up, and I cannot see the umpire, the catcher, or the batter. So, Ronnie, take over.
Can you sit down, please?
Three balls.
Can you sit down, please?
I'm going to have to take these off and blow my nose.
Fine, okay. Matt, if you could turn the crowd noise up so we can maybe catch a little in the background there.